The Bill Myers Show podcast is sponsored by Clouser Drilling. They've been leading the way in Southern Oregon well drilling for over 50 years. Find out more about them at clouserdrilling.com. Randy writes for This Morning Bill. Today would have been Ronnie Van Zandt's 76th birthday. All right.
Well, it's 8 o'clock in Boise, Idaho.
Yeah, the original. The original lead singer-songwriter for Lynyrd Skynyrd. Would have been 76. And Randy says, a little bumper music would be good, however. Today should be a national holiday. Yeah, for anything involving Lynyrd Skynyrd, I'm right there with you, Randy. Now, I always liked What's Your Name? I always liked this one because it was kind of like their version of We're an American Band. It was their version of Grand Funk's We're an American Band, except, you know, where's the groupie, right? You know, that sort of thing. But, yeah, very interesting. I appreciate the reminder, Randy. So we'll have some more Skynyrd bumper music for today on what would have been Ronnie Van Zandt's 76th birthday. Boy, I have to tell you, I'm looking here this morning in my inbox, and I don't know if it's because of all the talk about crypto and the market craziness, but I have never received so many scam emails over the past few years as I have these last few days, and a lot of that involving cryptocurrency. Now, my mail provider screens out most of them, but I just wanted to warn you if you're getting similar stuff like this. And here we have a lot of stuff is coming in through so-called DocuSign, you know, which is an online way to sign documents, one of many. There are PDFs that will come in. And I'm looking at one that that came into the Bill Myers Show mailbox that made it through the spam filter. And it was from DocuSign. It says, unrecognized digital currency transfer alert. Payment received from DocuSign. And a transaction, it says. Now, I have a PayPal account, too, because I had a PayPal account years ago for dealing with eBay, even though you don't have to have that anymore. But I still have one. And so they try to get you, because you realize, okay, I have a PayPal account, so maybe I should check this out. But it says, a transaction of $599 for 0.00789 Bitcoin, BTC, has been initiated on your PayPal account. The payment originating from an unknown address in Texas has been temporarily put on hold to protect your account. Immediate action required. If you did not authorize this payment, contact us immediately to secure your account. Now, of course, here's where the fun goes. There's PayPal Resolution Center. And the PayPal Resolution Center, they have toll-free available now, 1-808-808-7511. That's not the number for PayPal. You know, I can almost assure you that's it. And but they get you to either click on it, to click on the PDF on it, and it's usually some kind of browser hack, some kind of, you know, some sort of attack, some virus. And just understand that, you know, if you didn't initiate the payment, or if you're being told that some payment is being initiated or someone's trying to send you money, you know, it's kind of like they've just made the Nigerian prince trying to get $11 million out of the company or the out of the country email. They just made it a little more sophisticated, right? In which you're going like, oh, okay, well, maybe somebody does owe me $599 in Bitcoin. I better find out more. And, of course, they're going to want your banking information and your codes and all the rest of it. You know, I love it when they say that we're ready to shut down your email account, bill@billmyershow.com. Please log into this and verify your account. It's like, come on. So this way you just give away your credentials. Amazing time. I wish that we could return to more of a high-trust society. But when it comes to stuff online right now, we really can't be trustworthy. Or we really can't be trusting, I should say. Hopefully, we're trustworthy with one another. How about that? We have some open phones. If you wanted to, you can jump on it. Anything you want to. 770-563-3770-KMED. We're going to talk with Bob Hart next hour about the wildfire map letters that are going out. Have you decided whether or not you're going to appeal if you ended up getting the high rating? And it seems like if you were living outside, anywhere outside the city, that you're probably in a high area here. What are you going to do? We can talk about that and anything else on your mind, too.
Hi, this is Charlene at American Industrial Door.
Here's Bill Myers.
The slow bird
Since it would have been Ronnie Van Zandt's 76th birthday, yeah, we'll play some more, as Randy has suggested. More Lynyrd Skynyrd music as bumpers this morning. Curtis Lowe, the Ballad of Curtis Lowe. I got to tell you, I know that everybody always talks about Sweet Home Alabama and Freebird. I heard Freebird so many times. I mean, I like it still, but it's like, man, I'm done, right? You know, I heard it when I was in classic rock radio, played it like 4 million times. And so usually when I had to go to the bathroom, which told you how often I had to go to the bathroom, but I'm kind of done with that one. But the Ballad of Curtis Lowe is my favorite Lynyrd Skynyrd song. And I know that's kind of one of those weird ones that nobody ever thought about. And it was only performed in concert one time, and it never made it after that. And to me, it was just such an interesting mind picture of life in the South, of a little kid going there and hanging out with, a drunk guitar player. Guitarist named Curtis Lowe playing the black man's blues. Just good stuff. Anyway, it is 21 after 7. Holly Morton, Josephine County Republican Party Chair. Haven't talked to you for a few days, Holly. How are things shaking up? And are the hissy fits placated? Have there been enough people sacrificed to the volcano of the progressive left's, hissy fitting in Joe County to quiet things down or not? What do you think?
No, it appears it'll never end. You know, we just had the commissioner situation where John West was recalled, of course,
right.
And then the two remaining had to pick someone else. So they decided they were going to pick the most experienced guy. So they lined up, I guess, three of the most experienced guys. You know, Herman Bearsugar and Andreas Black, two fabulous guys,
mm-hmm.
ended up in the final cut, and then they finally chose Andreas Black. And, they're still having a fit. Oh,
you know, now I was told, though, that the reason that I was told from an insider that the reason that they chose Black, though, is that this is about trying to avoid another recall effort. Would you agree or not on that?
I think there's no way to avoid another recall effort.
Really?
They're already saying they're going to do a recall. It doesn't matter. Anybody that wasn't somebody they wanted they're going to try to recall him right away. And I imagine they'll start it right away.
Did they want Pat Fahey or someone like that? Is that who they were looking for?
They wanted Pat Fahey. They wanted Colleen Martin, perfectly lovely woman. But you know, they didn't want to have somebody who was not experienced. You know, and Colleen's not experienced. She's experienced with the Chamber of Commerce. And Pat Fahey is just, that's a no. Too far to the left. And there were several others that just, they weren't elected by citizens, and Andreas Black wasn't elected, but he's a local businessman, very smart.
Well, he did serve as the fill-in commissioner for a while, too.
Months, yeah. And he did a good job. He's a very fine man, just a wonderful, moral man, and now he's just what we would be looking for. So I'm real happy with the selection. I think it'll be fine.
Okay, now I wanted to ask you, though, about the hissy fit over the library. Because, of course, my thing about all library systems here in Southern Oregon are essentially Democratic Party outposts. No matter what they say. A friend of mine termed them the Democratic mosques. kind of a radical jihadist kind of take on it. I know that's tarring with a broad brush. I know there are good people working within it. But, yeah, this is... I find it astounding. I went and caught.
Recorded.
Hello?
Are you there?
Yeah, I'm here. What was that?
I do not know what that was. Might have been me.
Oh, okay. All right. Something about recording the call. I was like, okay, I'm recording your call too. So we're recording each other. All right.
Oh, dear.
Now, the point being, though, is that everything, the hissy fitters broke out and just went nuts over the Josephine County Library District actually paying rent, paying something for the building it's in other than a dollar a year. And yet, I commented on a Grants Pass Facebook page about this. I said, guys, your county's broke right now.
Right.
They're looking for pennies underneath the couch cushion right now, and you have the library, which is guaranteed, what is it, a 33 cents or so per thousand district cost per thousand on the income tax or the property tax? Isn't that what they get right now?
They're trying to build a big fancy library, so they got about 900,000 put away.
Okay, so they already know that they want to build another library, All right, so they have money to build another library, but they don't want to pay the county for its existing library building. They want to pay anything for that at all?
No, well, they pay $1, but there, you know, the problem now is there's some leaks and maintenance issues, and some bunch of money is going to have to be invested.
Oh.
And what they'd like them to do is either pay rent. I mean, they can continue on if they pay. And we've got to get those repairs made. Otherwise, you know, the permanent damage to the building. So there's a lot going on. Nobody wants to hear the fiscal end of things, Bill. It's all about politics.
Oh, okay. And the only reason why they're going after the library is because it's about revenge, right? I'll bet that's what it is. Is that what they're saying?
Take everything that way. The permanent victim status, you know, that seems to be what's happening.
Oh.
And they had been invited to come in and talk about it several different times, and they never showed up. The meeting that I went to,
to be fair, though, they were saying, though, that they were asking for meetings when the attorney for the district couldn't show up, though. That's the way I was told to me about that.
You know, I'm sure there are lots of different reasons, but several different dates were proposed. So I think what they've done is they've said, look, we're going to go ahead and we're going to, give you 30-day notice and you know, let's get you to the table. So I think that'll get them to the table. But, you know, right now there's just a lot of muscling of each other going on.
You know, in retrospect, do you think it would have been wise, given the drama that's been going on, maybe have waited a month or two to have sprung that?
Well, you know, it probably would have been wise, but you just can't. Bill, I think the best thing to do is just get people to the table. And you do what it takes to get them to the table, in my opinion. I don't see anything wrong with it. You invited them to talk about it, and they don't seem to want to talk about it.
Well, essentially, the library district got a sweetheart deal and has been a mooch for a long time on county property. And so now, I mean, and they're not a part of county government, right? They're their own district. And that's the important thing.
Right.
If the district was actually a part of the Josephine County Commission, purview, in other words, if it was actually part of the government itself, that would be different, but it's not. And so it's no different than anybody else trying to rent some county property. Wouldn't that be the case, really?
Right. Well, I think what people are not getting is that we used to have a very prosperous county when we had the timber industry. When we lost that, all of a sudden, we lost all these revenues. We didn't used to have to have all the taxes.
Yeah, and then you have to end up doing these bond levies to pay for everything that used to be paid for by the trees. But the trees, you know, the trees are only for burning in the summertime. You know that, right?
Yeah, of course, right.
Of course.
So there are these issues, and people are just having a terrible time adjusting to that. Everybody thinks everything's about politics. They don't understand the fiscal elements of it. And when it comes to, you know, change of personnel and that kind of thing, we have to, just like any family would or any business would, we have to cut down the expenses, or we're absolutely going to go broke, or all of the citizens are going to have to step up and pay more and more and more of the bills.
That kind of reminds me a little bit in this argument over at Providence. I know it's not exactly apples to oranges comparison. But, the union, of course, the nurses union, you know, wants more money and they want more nurses hired so that it's better for the patients. I understand that. I can appreciate that. I know they all work hard. And yet at the same time, Providence Hospital has been losing money for the last 3-4 years.
Right.
Lots of money. And so you got to figure, it's like, hey, we may have this need, you may have this want, but it doesn't matter. There's only so much in the kitty, right? The same thing's happening in Josephine County at a smaller scale, I guess, really.
You know, problem of people that just don't make enough money, so they keep putting more and more and more stuff on their credit card, and pretty soon they reach a breaking point. Same kind of a concept. People don't see what's coming down the road is if you overspend, you know, if you're spending money you don't have, at some point, you know, you're going to reach a point where you got to pay it all back.
Yeah, well, I'm hoping that things calm down, because I'll tell you, Josephine County, I've joked with you before, Josephine County politics over the last a couple of years especially has been like student council. Student council and cliques and hissy fits and screeching. It's really weird. I'm hoping we can calm down there. Wouldn't that be great if we just kind of pull together?
It would be great. I try to avoid it, but it's hard. I see my name in print in a very unflattering way.
Well, you're a very, 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 very bad person, according to what I'm reading online about you. So I don't even know why I'm talking with you, Holly. I'm teasing you. You know that, right?
Right.
Okay, good. Now, let's talk about the good stuff. Now, Trump inauguration, you're going to have a watch party in Joe County on Monday, right?
We are. It's going to start at 8:30 in the morning. It's a brunch. We're charging $12. You know, to come in, have a nice brunch, watch it on the big screen TV, and hobnob with fellow patriots. It'll be a great time. We have such a neat group right now. Hardworking. They really care about this community, and it'll be a great time to watch the president be inaugurated.
Yeah, and the Josephine County Democrats will be in mourning, I would imagine, someplace, or coming up with strategizing plans on how to resist Trump, because Trump is coming after us over the next 4 years.
Well, bless their hearts. They still think something's going to happen to keep him from being inaugurated.
Oh, really?
Oh, yeah. You hear that all the time. If you're online, you'll see, you know, people think, something's going to happen. They're going to do this, or their 14th Amendment, or they've got something up their sleeve. There's no way he's ever going to get inaugurated.
Oh, okay. So, well, yeah, a little bit of delusion, it's okay, but people are entitled to their delusions, I guess. Holly, yes. I appreciate you sharing the latest update there. So everything's going to be okay with Andreas in the county commission, you think? Everything's fine with that?
Well, I think they've got a great team right now, and I think they're going to do an excellent job. That's my personal opinion about it. We'll see how it rolls.
And you're sticking to it. All right. Thanks, Holly. Good hearing from you.
Yeah.
All right.
Bye-bye.
Holly Morton once again, and she is the chair of the Josephine County Republican Party. 7:31. By the way, tomorrow I'm going to be talking with Colleen Martin and Joyce, and of course they're now the new leadership team at the Jackson County Republican Party, and they're going to be doing a watch party of some sort too. So both counties are going to be doing a lot of celebrating. So we'll have that all coming up.
K4VIN 016551.
You're hearing The Bill Myers Show on 106.3 KMED.
Streamed on KMED.com. Appreciate you listening this morning. Bob Hart will be joining me here. About a half hour, we're going to be talking about the land use consultant world and what are we going to do about this whole situation involving the fire map letters which have come out. It's just absolutely atrocious what has been going on. And maybe he'll have a tip or two for us. And so that'll be about a half hour from now. By the way, Commissioner Colleen Roberts just text messaged me and said, Bill, Colleen Roberts, not Colleen Martin. Wrong county, too many Colleens. Yeah, we do have a little bit of that. Did I say Colleen Martin was coming in tomorrow morning? Sorry about that, Commissioner. So it's definitely Commissioner Roberts who will be coming in, along with Joyce from the Jackson County Republican Party. So there we go. And we're also going to be talking about, Friday with the forester who took over for Merv George on Friday. So we're going to kind of keep you up on some forest news and forest care news, et cetera, keeping you informed as much as possible. By the way, Calvin called me after the show. Listener Calvin called me, and he is a mail deliverer. And there was an email of the day that came in, and a person was saying, how is it that the state is getting all of these letters out there in registered mail? And I don't have I don't know if I am going to explain this right, but I wrote a few notes from the phone call he got, and the way the deal was cut between the state of Oregon, ODF, and the Postal Service is that they would scan these letters, and these certified letters would be technically accepted by the mail carrier. There were so many thousands of these letters coming out that to have done the registered mail the standard way, there's just no way that the Postal Service could have done certified letters in the standard way of going up and getting you to sign for it. So they ended up coming up with a special deal for these particular letters, okay, the regular certified mail option. So that's what Calvin told me, and I really appreciate you letting me know about that, Calvin, because, yeah, I was wondering, how did he do that? Because normally, you know, certified, you gotta sit there and sign for it, but not in this particular case. All right.
News brought to you by Millett Construction, specializing in foundation repair and replacement. Get on solid ground. Visit MilletteConstruction.com.
From the KM.
Your roof, no matter the season.
19 before 8, R.J. Rogers joins me here on KMED. And R.J. Rogers earned his MBA from the College of Business and Leadership. He lives in Pennsylvania, longtime researcher into the mafia, the American Cosa Nostra. And you can follow him online at RJRogers6 at Twitter, or X as the case might be. He has a brand new book out there, The Dawn, 36 Rules of the Bosses. How you doing, RJ? Great to have you on.
Fantastic. Great introduction.
You know, RJ, I really enjoy, I don't know what it is or what it says about my personality. I have always found the makeup of the Mafia, Mafia books, Mafia movies. Of course, Godfather, one of my favorite movies. I don't know how much truth there is, you know, to that kind of stuff. Could you comment on that before we dig into the other aspects of The Don and what you've done with this book?
Godfather 1 and 2 are the quintessential productions that I would say closest resembles the research of looking at various historical points, for sure.
All right, so it is not just a script then. There's a lot of truth to what was going on in that movie.
The key to that movie was Francis Coppola. He was a second-generation Italian. He got a rich Italian family, rich in heritage and culture, so he was able to bring a lot of elements to the Italian spirit of that movie that was very relevant. He was the brains behind, really behind that. Now, the Mafia side was a little bit, it's a little, I would say they make it a little more romantic than it really is, but they do focus on the hierarchy, the very high points within the mob, the boss level and the concierge and the boss level, and that's it's pretty close, I'd say. It's pretty well done from what I read.
Yeah, is the Cosa Nostra different from the Mafia? Are they one and same, or the same, different names for the same thing?
Mafia was never the name of it. That was a name made up by the FBI and the media.
Okay.
The actual name was Cosa Nostra. They were actually offended by the name Mafia. Cosa Nostra translates to this thing of ours or our thing. But they never referred to it as Mafia. Even people who flipped and testified, said on the stands, like, I never heard nobody in this life ever refer to us as a Mafia.
That's interesting. I didn't know that until reading this book. And I've been digging into it. I'm about a third of the way through it right now and really enjoying the history of Gotti and some of the other, you know, learning some of this. Why did you do this? What was it about this? Because there's been about a million books on this, but this one has a different feel. What were you hoping to accomplish with this one?
You just tickled my heart when you said it has a different feel. I guess that's why I did it, because I do enjoy reading. I do enjoy the history, and I find the history of the Mafia very intriguing as to how people came here with fifth grade educations and speaking broken English with no social or economic standing, but they made a $1 billion organization. But if you all the books you buy are just various historical pieces and profiles of the history, but there's never really been a social behavior study. There's never been a book that delves into the psychology of a gangster, the psychology of the Mafia. And this book here explores the social element of it. So this is like the first psychology book ever written on this life.
If you were to take a look at a typical member of the Cosa Nostra, the various five families that, you know, in the United States back in the time, is there a very common psychological profile that you could say, hey, this is the type of personality that would tend to do this and do well? Or were there different types? It takes all types to make a world, so to speak.
I think that the psychology has been very consistent. From its inception until present time, I think there's, and I think the psychology it transfers out to any people who are high achieving or highly ambitious or trying to make their way to the high side of the hierarchy, to make their way to the upper point. I think the mindset to achievement is very similar in all people.
Is it a situation here where, you know, I know that when I would read other books and they would talk about Cosa Nostra, and then I look at you in The Don, 36 Rules of the Bosses, and when we think of it, we think of the violence. That's what most people think of when they think of the organized crime back of this era here. And was it as violent as they claimed, or is it something in Hollywood kind of amplified, or is it really one of those things where the violence was like the last thing they wanted to do because, you know, the supposedly bad for business kind of thing? How do you see that?
Yeah, very over-exaggerated. That's just the part that gets that grabs everybody's mind and attention, and that works good in a Hollywood film. But If they were just killing nonstop all the time, the mob would have been erased long. It would not have existed for 100 years in this country. No, it was just, you know, the rules of the mafia is make money. How do we make money? And killing people that kind of gets in the way of making money. Have they killed? Absolutely. Did they have harsh rules where you paid with your life for your penalties? Absolutely. But it was more about brokering a deal and a lot of extortion, a lot of deal making, a lot of connections and friendships and sit downs and discussions, and a lot of it. It's just a group of guys drinking coffee and having a drink and laughing about the game, and not all that dissimilar from everybody else. I think people think of it as this like high strung environment, but how I look at it, that's not the reality of it at all.
Of all the people that you profiled in The Don, 36 Rules of the Bosses, who do you find the most interesting and why? Which one strikes you as the most interesting?
Frank Costello.
Really?
I find him fascinating because he really embodies the 36 rules at the highest level. It's very rare. This is why I find him interesting. He was multiple different personalities. He was the personality that mattered as to what the time called for. So very rare can a mafia boss assume wealth and power and then be okay with relaxing and walking away from it and letting somebody have it. It's a very sacred rank to make it to the boss of a family, and you never give it up. It's like being the president of the United States. You work your whole life for it, and you never give it up. Even when your polls are bad, in most cases, you die on the ballot.
Right.
That's why Joe Biden did not want to step down, because it's to your honor to die on the ballot. You go up, you fought too hard to get there. It's prestigious. You don't give it up. Same as a mafia boss. You die in war. You go out on the mattresses. When there's a coup in the family or there's a war between two families, you fight and retain what you worked so hard for.
Yeah, not all that different. Not even all that different from so-called legitimate government. It's very interesting. I can't wait till I get to the Costello part of the history, all right? R.J. Roger, thanks for sharing a few minutes. Like I said, this is a very different book about the Cosa Nostra. It's The Don, 36 Rules of the Bosses, and I'm going to enjoy finishing that, okay? Be well. Thanks for having joined the show
a little bit. Thank you.
Okay? It is 11 before 8 on KME 99.3 KBXG, and we will go to the mattresses or your calls. You know what we could actually do here? Let's go to the Diner 62 Real American Quiz before we go back to the mattress of your calls on the issues of the day, all right? If you have not won the Diner 62 Quiz in the last 60 days, you could win it next. How about that? And let me tell you a little bit about what's happening at Diner 62. All your hearty favorite breakfast favorites, the omelets, the skillets, the waffles, the biscuits and gravy, the biscuits and, you know, the size of your head, you know, that kind of thing. French toast, it's all there. And that hot open face sandwich special is still on through Valentine's Day. The pot roast sandwich or the hot turkey sandwich too. Many, many other things going. I'll give you a $20 gift certificate if you can win this quiz next. Multiple choice, and we're talking about something that happened in Boston today about 105 years ago, 106 years ago, actually, and we'll kick it around next, okay?
One of each, K4 VIN 0165-51, MSRP 24145, Telluride VIN 593123, MSRP.
The Travel Report on KMED.com. Sponsored by Lithia Body and Paint on Bullock Road in Medford.
Good morning. This is News Talk 106.3 KMED. And you're waking up with the Bill Myers Show.
And the Diner 62 Real American Quiz. Diner 62, just south of White City. Love it. Eat it. Good stuff. Everybody's mouth waters. And they say, hey, you won. Let me go to Jerry. Jerry the Bull, you are first up this morning. How you doing, Jer?
Doing good.
Jerry, let's see if we can make it even better. It was today in history, Wednesday, January 15th of 1919. The molasses burst from a huge tank at the United States Industrial Alcohol Company building in the heart of Boston. The United States Industrial Alcohol Building, located on Commercial Street near North End Park in Boston. This molasses tank was 58 feet high, 98 feet in diameter. It's a big tank. It was used to store molasses, which eventually was shipped to a distillery in Cambridge. The question is, how many people died in the Great Molasses Flood? I don't think I've ever done this question. So was it A, 2? Was it B, 11? Was it C, 21? Was it D, 31? Or was it E, 41 people? There were people that died in the Great Molasses Flood. How many made it? Or how many died or didn't make it?
Well, Bill, it's a pure guess. I'll just say two.
You'll say two. I'm sorry, Jerry the Bull. It was more than two, but I appreciate you trying. Let me go to Wally. Hello, Wally. It was more than two. So it's either.
I'm going to guess 21.
You're going to guess 21. Hey, it's a good day for you.
You're a winner!
Oh, wow.
Yep, it was 21. It was a fiery, hot molasses flood, ultimately killed 21 people, hurt about 150 more, Wally. And this was a big deal back at the time. Close to lunchtime, Boston was having some warm weather, and the workers were loading freight cars within the building. And suddenly, the bolts holding the bottom of the tank blew out, and the bolts shot out like bullets, and the waves swept away the freight cars, caved in the building's doors and windows. And the few workers in the building's cellar had no chance. The liquid poured down and overwhelmed them. And the huge quantity of molasses flowed into the street outside. It knocked over the local firehouse, pushed over the beams of the elevated train line, and then drowned and burned five workers at Public Works. Like I said, 21 people, dozens of horses killed. Took months to clean the molasses up from the streets of Boston. And by the way, this disaster also produced an epic court battle. There were more than 100 lawsuits filed against the United States Industrial Alcohol Company, and they paid out more than $1 million in liability claims. And that was a big amount of money back in 1919 when $1 million really meant something. So, Wally, it's a $20 gift certificate from Diner 62, but it's still, you'll enjoy it, okay? Hang on, all righty?
Yeah.
All righty. And we will do this again Friday. We'll have another Diner 62 Real American Quiz.
Looking for your next adventure?
This is the Bill Myers Show.
We're going to have a lot of good conversation coming up here in the next few because Bob Hart, land use consultant. He's a retired one now, but he understands this stuff. I think he has a lot to say about the wildfire map letters. And maybe he'll have a tip or two for us. And I hope that could be of use to you. Okay, so keep the number in mind, 770-5633. Let me go to Minor Dave. Minor Dave, are you back in the Iron Gate? Or are you still hanging around waiting for your house to get rebuilt or something new be put in?
Well, I've got a trailer donated to me, but I need, I'm supposedly having a generator donated to make the heater work. I need electric power. It's only DC, but I need to be able to plug it into a generator so I can keep the battery charged until I can get a solar panel up I have. But that's a little complicated because I need more batteries and I need...
Batteries aren't cheap, by the way.
No, that's the most expensive whole part of this. Outside of having the right control box that we would call a capacitor bank, you know, to be able to have it last any long time.
Now, all right, now, Dave, this is not Conspiracy Theory Thursday.
No, I know.
But you were saying when I was talking with Holly Morton, who called in from the Republican Party, Josephine County Republican Party, she's the chair up there, and during that phone call, something broke into the line and said, this call is being recorded.
Right.
And you said that's President Trump?
I'm saying it's an aid from President Trump because he's looking at defending the counties against the state sanctuary state. And he's going to ink deals out with county commissioners and county leaders so that if they defy the state, they'll get the Justice Department to defend them.
Okay, why would President Trump be recording our phone call when he could just as easily record?
He's trying to identify if he's got support to actually do that.
Okay, I'm trying to understand this one. You know, there are many wild claims that come into this show. This is one of the wilder ones. And of course, for all I know, usually the difference between a conspiracy theory on the program and maybe it being confirmed is about a month, usually. Sometimes 2 months. It just depends.
Right.
All right. And I just don't know why they would bother recording the phone call and then putting a note
because
on it.
Two-thirds of the state is red and they voted for him.
Okay, so he's incoming Trump administration is surveilling us on the way, even though they're not in power yet. Okay.
Well, they're not doing anything illegal because they're not going to rebroadcast your copyrighted material. They just wanted to be able to listen to it on Gates thing. It's
Well, you know, he could just download it very easy. It's absolutely free on BillMeyerShow.com and KMED.com. All right, Dave, I just wanted to try to understand that. That is one of the more unusual claims. I love it. Thanks for the call. So, if you're not being surveilled by the government, then you're a nobody, right? I guess. Let me go to line two. Hi, good morning. This is Bill. Who's this?
Hey, Bill, it's Lucretia.
Lucretia, this is perfect. After that last call, it's perfect. What's on your mind?
Oh, good. Okay. Hey, I was reading a John Rappaport article, and he said Gavin Newsom promised he'd burn over 1 million acres so that, you know, he could reduce the stress, threat of fire. He only burned 36,000.
Yeah, they haven't really good. You see, I'm a little bit mixed on this, though, because I've heard a lot of talk about, well, we need to burn the forest more, because that's what we get from the professional arsonists known as the collaboratives here in Southern Oregon. The problem with burning the forest is that there's a lot of nastiness in the air that comes from a lot of that, too. And
yeah, I know. I asked Ed about that. You know, what is his feelings? But it's interesting because, you know, and I'm looking at the jet stream right now, about 500 helipackles, and you can see it's just turning. It's going right up, into Canada and then coming right back and literally the middle of the country.
Now, Rogue Weather will say that is a ridge which is built up.
No, that's not how. You don't go all the way to the middle of the country and do a 180 and come back out and then turn back around.
Okay. Now, all I'm going to say, I've said this before, since we've slid into conspiracy theory Thursday on Wheels Up Wednesday, this is, the borders have been blurred here today. This was not something I planned, all right? All I'm saying is that if we have our favorite globalists and or government agent cabalists that are in charge of the pushing the weather buttons, I need you to find out who they are so we can place an order and get the weather that we want, okay?
Well, Bill, I sent you about 3 pages of all...
No. I'm not talking about who's doing it. We want to find out. We just want to find out. We need to put the order in, okay? We need to get some nice rain and snow in the winter, and we'll make it maybe about 85 degrees and sunny in the summer. How about that? Could we get the order in? Just place an order?
Well, the Air Force wanted to control the weather, so I would say it's our Air Force.
Well, usually it's when the airports are trying to control the weather, it's usually to get rid of fog during that kind of stuff, seeding the clouds.
They want to control the weather, all the weather by 2025. And you know, Trump just gave another $800 billion when he first came into the Air Force, Space Force. But that's part of the...
I think you mean $800 million. I don't think he gave them $800 billion, right?
I think it was. I think when he first came in.
$800 billion would be about one-fourth of the government expenditures.
I'll look it up for you.
Okay, you do that. Thanks, Lucretia. Thanks for starting off Conspiracy Theory Thursday early.